from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome in on this Monday evening. It is Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth, joined in studio by Adam Vingan of The Athletic. We have so much to break down after two huge wins for the Nashville Predators Saturday afternoon in St. Louis, Sunday evening last night at Bridgestone Arena, both against the Blues. They sweep the home and home. They sweep the season series from the St. Louis Blues. Adam, how are we doing this evening?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Doing pretty well. When I reached out last week to ask for your presence on this version of Preds Insiders, I'm going to be honest, I didn't really expect to be talking about back-to-back wins over the St. Louis Blues, and there were times during last night's game where I did not think we were going to be talking about back-to-back wins over the St. Louis Blues. But here was one of the more impressive things that I found, not only from last night but Saturday as well, is that they just found a way. And in too many games earlier this season, they found a way to lose, and they found a way to win both Saturday afternoon after giving up the lead. They scored that big goal in the third period, Mikael Granlund. And then last night, Kyle Turris, with just over 2 minutes to go, scoring the game winner on Jordan Binnington. And finally, a three-game winning streak for the first time since October. It feels like there is some hope around this team where there wasn't much of that for much of the middle of this season.
No, you're absolutely right. I agree with you that I was skeptical about the Predators' chances of winning both of those games against St. Louis, but the Blues have been sputtering as of late.
Now lost five in a row.
So they came into the home and home not as formidable as they've been throughout most of the season. The Predators took advantage, and I agree with your sentiment about them finding a way, because I especially look at last night's game. The Predators were on their heels for most of that game. The Blues had a distinct territorial advantage throughout the game. Pekka deserves a significant amount of the credit. He had a virtuoso performance, vintage performance.
It was the best performance he's had all season, and also the most important one
yes.
as well.
Not just for the team's stand, not just for the team's success, but his own success, because of how UC Saros has seemingly wrestled the starting job from him over the past few weeks. So I think it was just as important for him personally to have that game as it was for the team, considering the way the game transpired. But that's the kind of game where throughout most of the season, one of two things happens. I'm talking about yesterday's game. They either get blown out of the building, or they lose in some sort of heartbreaking fashion. You know, think of the Winter Classic. They're up 2-0 in that game. It's not their best game, but they're up 2-0. The Stars come back, and the Predators just fold it.
You can throw Saturday in there as well. They're up 3-1. They lose the lead. It gets tied up before the end of the second period. That is a game, to your point, earlier this season, they probably would have found a way to lose that game.
Yes.
But
so you're right.
They found
both
a way
game,
to win.
Both games. So I think that speaks well to the team's improvement and what John Hines likes to call their mental fortitude. They found themselves facing adversity in both games and found a way, as you said, to win them. And to me, more so than winning three games in a row, I think that's the most important aspect. The fact that when things weren't going right, they did not shrink. They continued to play, and ultimately they found a way to earn four very big points to keep them in the wild card race.
So before we started the show, I had told Adam, I said, I'm going to hit you with a question of what are the three things that impressed you the most over the weekend? And then it turns out that we completely agreed with the three things. And the number one thing was the fact that they found a way in both games to beat the defending champs. Struggling as they may be, they found a way to win two games against a really big opponent and a really big point in the season. The other points that we brought up, A, Kyle Turris, and B, goaltending. Let's start with Kyle Turris. 4 points over the course of the two games, 2 goals, 2 assists, and scores the game winner last night. Kyle Turris looks like a completely different player under John Hines now than he did under Peter Laviolette.
It's amazing what happens to a player when their coach believes in them. That's simply what it is. Peter Laviolette seemingly wanted nothing to do with Kyle Turris, and I think that was evident by scratching him in 7 consecutive games earlier this season. And the interesting thing that John Hines has pointed out multiple times about Kyle Turris is that he wasn't given the ice time. He earned the ice time. He's spoken very highly of Kyle since he's been here, and Kyle has seen his ice time increase by more than 2 minutes per game under John Hines. It was at 14:20 per game before the coaching change. It's at 16:35 after the coaching change. I believe he led all Predators forwards in time on ice yesterday. I think it was around 18.5, slightly above. So he has been put in a position to succeed. It's as simple as that. It's funny what happens when a player who's as talented as Kyle Turris is given an opportunity to play with other talented players, not buried on the fourth line, and is given an opportunity in big-time moments, and he delivered yesterday. So full marks to Kyle Turris and for taking advantage of the opportunities that John Hines has given him.
Not only Kyle Turris delivering, but Philip Forsberg made a savvy play.
He did, yes.
To set up Kyle Turris. And it was a game in which there wasn't a whole lot of space for either team. Well, the Blues did have a lot of what you would say territorial advantage, but that felt like a playoff-style game on the ice.
Yes, it did.
It was obvious the two teams did not like each other, and especially as that game wore on, the fact that it was a back-to-back against the same team, you could tell that, but it was physical, it was tight, it was intense, and the fact that the Preds made a play when it mattered most with just over 2 minutes left, I thought spoke volumes about where this team could be headed. I don't know if they've turned a corner fully yet, but the fact that you've now won 3 in a row and there's a vibe around this team that I don't think we've felt all season long, I think that's a positive as well.
I imagine the Predators are like you or me or anybody who's listening, sitting in traffic, you're waiting to turn left. And you're getting there. You're getting to the corner. But there's traffic coming the other direction. So you're not quickly turning that corner. It's bumper to bumper, but you're slowly getting to the corner to turn left. I feel like that's where the Predators are. They're in that traffic jam still. They're almost getting to the corner. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You know, when you're trying to turn off of when you're trying to leave and you turn left or right on Murfreesboro Road, whichever way you're going, and you're just waiting to turn.
And your depth perception is not the greatest, especially right. At night.
Yes, and, especially for me.
Okay.
Because I'm blind and even the glasses don't really help. But
no?
No, they help enough.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is they haven't turned the corner yet, but they're waiting at the light. They're waiting at the green light to yield, to go through the intersection.
I said this to you before the show as well, that I want to see this for another week.
Yep.
Maybe not 3 straight wins this week. They host Carolina tomorrow night. They visit Chicago Friday. They host Columbus Saturday. 3 very winnable games. I don't think I need to see 3 wins from this team to feel like they've turned a corner. Probably 2, and probably without a clunker in there where, you know, they don't show up tomorrow night against Carolina and just get waxed like they have been at home way too many times in the last 2 seasons.
Yeah.
If they go 2-1 in these next 3 games before the trade deadline and you're feeling pretty good about yourselves as you enter the last really 6 weeks of the regular season, I think that corner is, if it hadn't been turned fully at that point, it's crossing traffic into that next lane.
Yeah, I think so. I really have nothing else to add.
So we liked the fact that the Preds found a way.
Yes.
We liked Kyle Turris.
Yes.
We also liked the goaltending.
Yes,
we did. UC Saros, really good Saturday. Made some big saves there against the Blues. But last night, Pekka-Rinne, and at times I didn't think Pekka-Rinne looked like himself, or I should say the vintage Pekka-Rinne. It looked like he was fighting the puck at times, and he was almost in the right place at the right time to stop the puck. But he got the job done, and he made some monster saves in the third period to keep that game tied before Turris gave them the lead.
And Pekka-Rinne is an incredibly self-aware individual. He knows he hasn't been playing well for the past few months. He knows that UC Soros has started the bulk of the games over the past few weeks. He understands the position that he's in right now in the rotation. And I asked him about that yesterday. I asked him after the game if the recent play of UC has made him put a little bit more pressure on himself to have a game like he did yesterday. And he said that, you know, he has struggled with that throughout his career sometimes, putting too much pressure on himself. But he's doing the best he can not to do that, and he has full support for UC. I mean, you can tell how much they truly care about each other, not as just teammates, but as people. I think Pekka-Rinne has handled this incredibly well. But I think it's great, as I mentioned, not just for the team, but for his own level of confidence. For him to have a game like that, even if it wasn't his cleanest game, even if, as you mentioned, may have been lucky to stop a few of them or was caught out of position but still was able to get a pad on it.
Or lucky that even if he was out of position, the Blues couldn't hit right. the open net.
Right. Even if all of that happened, the fact that he was able to make the saves that they needed to win that game, I think he should feel really good about himself, and I think that will certainly help this team down the line.
There was one save he made there in the third period where he had to do the snow angel.
Yes.
Where I totally thought that puck was going in.
Me too.
But it didn't.
It did not.
Because Pekka-Rinne was fantastic yesterday. And I think the overarching theme of the weekend is that a lot of the players that we have been asking to step up did step up. Whether they have been in recent weeks like Mikael Granlund and Kyle Turris, or the ones who have been quiet offensively in recent weeks like Victor Arvidsson and Matt Duchene scoring goals Saturday in St. Louis. Pekka-Rinne having a big effort last night. The big players, the big money players, the most important players on this roster really stepped up in a big way this yes. weekend, and I think that is another positive sign as well. Coming up next, we'll get more into Pekka-Rinne and UC Soros and this goaltending duo. Who would be the starting goalie right now if the playoffs were to start today? Plus, how much credit does John Hines deserve for these last 10 games in which the Preds are 7-3? We'll get to all of that coming up next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Barron across the line. Now the puck comes back, and the puck is swept wide of the net on the short side. Rebound pulled up by Perron, goes over to the right shoulder for Pietrangelo. Bounces in front. Rinne makes one save and then another. Big save there on Zach Sanford right in front.
Back at the 33 wins in a row, first time since October for this team. Is that meaningful to you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. This time of the year, just look at the standings. It's massive, 3 wins. So you got to... But at the same, this time of the year, I know it sounds boring, but never, not too high, not too low. Just, I think you try to, you know, kind of take the confidence out of these 3 games, especially against, you know, really good teams we played, and you know, one games in different ways too, and you know, pretty solid game against Islanders. You know, never really had any trouble in that game. Then, you know, it's just a very playoff type of game in St. Louis and another one tonight. So I thought that all the games were a little bit different, and we found a way to win these games different ways.
That was Pekka-Rinne after last night's 2-1 win over the St. Louis Blues. Ryan Porth alongside a dancing Adam Vingan of The Athletic.
This is when I'm glad that radio is not a visual medium.
Okay. I enjoyed your dancing
Thank
skills.
You. I have excellent rhythm. This is the thing. I have excellent rhythm. I'm not going to lie. I will brag. I have excellent rhythm, but I just don't know how to put it together with dance moves.
Okay.
Because I played rhythm.
I have no idea what you mean by that.
So I played rhythm instruments growing up. So, like, I can step to a beat. I have a good sense of where the beat is in the music. It's just putting the moves that look like dancing together. It's okay. A struggle.
That makes sense, and that sounds like, a lot like myself.
I don't look like Elaine Benes dancing on Seinfeld. Let's just put it to you that way. For you older listeners out there.
A Seinfeld reference here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So moving on to the product on the ice and not Adam Vingan's dance moves. The Preds last night win 2-1 over the St. Louis Blues. Pecorine makes 38 saves. UC Saros was impressive Saturday afternoon. He's been impressive in the month of February. He has a .939 save percentage in his last six appearances, does UC Saros. So, Adam Vingan, I know people don't like hypotheticals like this, and they don't like the statement of if the playoffs started today. But if the playoffs did start today, who are you starting in game one, Pecorine or UC Saros?
That's tough.
That's why I asked the question.
I know. I'm thinking about it. Unfortunately, dead air does not work well on the radio either.
It does not.
I would go with UC Saros.
Would you?
Yes. I just think that he has played better than Pecorine over the past few weeks, and it's been a very long time. I don't have the date in front of me. Since the last time a goaltender other than Pecorine started in a playoff game, if I'm not mistaken, that goaltender was Dan Ellis. That's how long ago it was.
I'm trying to rack my brain around it, and it has to be Dan Ellis.
It was back Dan
in
Ellis.
2008.
So it's been a long time. It's been more than 10 years since a goaltender not named Pecorine started a playoff game for the Nashville Predators.
The last time someone not named Pecorine started in a playoff game, Nick Lidstrom scored from center ice on a bouncing puck that got past Dan Ellis in game six of the 2008 first round.
So what you're saying is that was a Dan Ellis problem?
Wow.
Yes?
For the people who know that inside joke, hashtag Dan Ellis problems was a thing on Twitter once upon a
time. Yes. Anyway, we don't have time to explain
that. No, we don't. We don't have time for that.
But I would start UC Saros, and it would be a significant move to do so.
How short would your leash be with UC Saros? Let's say UC Saros in game one gives up 3-4 goals, looks shaky. Like, how quickly do you turn to Pecorine if UC Saros struggles in his first playoff start?
I wonder if they would use a blueprint similar to what the Chicago Blackhawks did against the Predators in 2015.
With Corey Crawford and Scott Darling.
Yes.
What about the Washington Capitals in 2018 with Philip Grubauer and Braden Holtby?
I could see that as well. If I'm not mistaken, Grubauer started the first two games.
Got lit up in Columbus.
And then...
Or at home against Columbus, I think.
Yes, the Capitals had home ice advantage in that series, I believe. And then Braden Holtby came back in and was there the rest of the way. But I do believe you have to give UC Saros a chance if he continues to play the way he's been playing throughout the rest of the regular season.
Today, I would agree with you on UC Saros, but that is subject to change.
Okay. Well, you said that the playoffs started today.
Sure.
So I just answered your question.
Well, thank you, Adam.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. So in the last 10 games, Adam, the Preds are 7-3.
Yes.
They've had wins at Washington.
Yes.
At Winnipeg. At Calgary. Home Islanders.
Yes.
They swept a home and home with the Blues.
Yes.
How much credit does John Hines get for these last 10 games?
I think he deserves a lot of credit. And I think it goes back to what we were talking about in the first segment. And some of it is the fact that the team seems to be catching on to what he wants them to do on the ice. And that's always important. And they've bought in, as we like to talk about. The buy-in is there.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes back to what we were talking about before. I think it's more mental than anything else. It's not perfect. You think of the game against Vegas. That was their worst offensive performance of the season.
By far.
After two, not necessarily impressive victories against Washington and New Jersey, but similarly to these games against the Blues, there was adversity that they had to face in those games, and they did so successfully. So it's not perfect yet, but I think I'm starting to see this team's mental state build back up. I think they're starting to get mentally tougher.
And I think when you look at the adversity that they have faced in a lot of these victories, you mentioned the Washington and New Jersey games right after the All-Star break. They faced a ton of adversity in those two games alone on a back-to-back. There were a lot of instances within those two games that they probably would have cracked under Peter Laviolette and lost those games.
I think
they won those games.
I think about the game against Washington specifically.
The Nick Bonino own goal?
When Nick Bonino put the puck in his own net, I turned to my seatmate, my friend Steve Wano of the Associated Press, and I said the Predators are not coming back from this. Mm-hmm. Like that, I already said, you can start. I basically said, you can start writing your Capitals win story because it's not happening. So the fact that they won, I was shocked.
Well, then you look at the wins from this weekend. We mentioned it in the first segment. The win in St. Louis, they were up 3-1. They gave up that lead. It was tied 3-3. And with the way a lot of games went in the first half of the season, or even further than just the first half of the season, one goal would have turned into two goals, would have turned into three, four goals, and that game would have gotten away from them. It did not. Last night, they make a big play and a big moment, and the fact that they were hanging on by a thread for much of that game, they did not let that get to them. Pecorine makes a lot of big saves. You look at what they've had to go through in a lot of the wins, I think it makes these last 10 games all that more impressive. And the fact that John Hines has been preaching that mental fortitude ever since he stepped behind the bench, I think these last 10 games are starting to show you that maybe in terms of the mental fortitude, they have turned a corner.
Yes.
Maybe not on the ice in terms of wins and losses, but the mental fortitude side of things, that they have turned a corner. Think of it, too, in this way. There hasn't truly been one of those unforgivable losses. Like the Vegas game, they stunk offensively. Right. But that wasn't one of those games like it was back against Toronto on January 27th or Anaheim in January when it was just completely unforgivable. The Winter Classic where they led 2-0 and then just folded like a cheap suit. The games against Pittsburgh after the Christmas break. Like there were a lot of inexcusable losses earlier this season. And I don't know if I really categorize any of the three losses in the last 10 games, maybe the Vancouver game. But outside of that game, I don't categorize any of the losses like that. So in these last 10 games, they really are starting to play like we all expect them to. Maybe not on a consistent period-to-period basis, but they are definitely showing signs of life.
Yes, I would agree with that. And I think that's the most important thing. I wrote a story, I believe it was after the Vegas game, in which I stated that John Hines didn't have enough time this season to change the Predators' mindset, that this was going to be a process that was going to need work throughout the rest of this season, whether they made the playoffs or not, and at the beginning of next season in training camp and through the beginning of the regular season next year. And that still might be the case. But I would say that since then, I think they've taken to it perhaps a bit quicker than I expected. I agree with you. It's not perfect, and it's hard. We're not psychiatrists here. We can play them on the radio. We're not psychiatrists, though. But I do believe that in terms of their response to problems in games, it's been much better than it was before the coaching change.
He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. Coming up next, does this weekend impact the Preds' trade deadline plans at all? I'll discuss that with Adam coming up next on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
The puck still free, given out to Turris. Turris, stick heavy, he scores!
Kyle Turris scores with 2:12 to go! It's 2-1 Nashville!
I'm just trying to take advantage of the opportunity he's giving me, and I'm thankful for that opportunity, just having a lot of fun trying to take advantage of it.
That was Kyle Turris last night with Darren Pang on NBC Sports Network after the Preds win 2-1. The call you heard there was Turris' game-winning goal with just over 2 minutes remaining in regulation last night against the St. Louis Blues. The Preds sweep the home-and-home with the Blues with a 4-3 win on Saturday, a 2-1 win last night. And before we move on to the trade deadline, I do want to say this about Saturday's game because we've mostly been talking about last night's game, since that is fresh in our memory. Jared Tenorti, the fact that he dropped the gloves with Robert Bortuzzo Saturday afternoon, had to have earned a lot of brownie points within that locker room with the fact that Robert Portuzo cross-checked violently Victor Arvidsson back in November, and Portuzo only got a four-game suspension. I have to think Jared Tenorti got a lot of stick taps on the shin and a lot of just a lot of kudos in the locker room for dropping the gloves with Portuzo.
Yeah, Victor Arvidsson even, I believe, said after the game on Saturday that he respected Jared Tenorti for doing that, even when considering that Jared Tenorti wasn't on the team at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was something I talked about with Robbie on our most recent episode of the Smash Brothers last Friday, was whether there was going to be any shenanigans involving Robert Portuzo when you consider that it was going to be the first game that the two teams had played against each other since Portuzo returned to the lineup, because they played each other 2 days after the initial cross-check, and he was, of course, suspended. But it's been so long, and the game had such importance to the Predators that I was curious if they would sort, you know, seek revenge. And they did. I mean, even Arvidsson gave Portuzo the business at various points throughout the game. So those feelings certainly did not disappear, despite it being a few months since the incident happened.
Call or text us, 615-737-1025. We'd be glad to take your calls, answer any questions that you may have for Adam Vinken of The Athletic. And Adam, the biggest big picture question that I have coming out of yesterday's win specifically is, how does the back-to-back against St. Louis, the fact that they won both games and that they've now won three in a row, they're 3 points out of a playoff spot after both Calgary and Arizona won today in their matinee President's Day games. How does this weekend back-to-back change or alter or impact David Poile's plans at the trade deadline? How would you answer that?
I don't think it should, to be honest. At least not significantly.
All right, so if you don't think it should, what did you think his plan should have been for the trade deadline before they just won three in a row?
Before they had won three in a row, I thought he should be a soft seller.
And what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is they didn't need to tear it down, but I think they needed to trade at least one of the players on an expiring contract. That was my feeling before this winning streak.
Mikhail Granlund, Craig Smith, maybe even Dan Hamhuis.
Yeah, somebody on an expiring contract needed to be traded. That was my feeling before the past 3 games.
So what's your feeling today?
I think, to be honest with you, we talked about this before the show. David Poile has made several win-now moves, not just at the deadline, but off-season, free agency.
Just in general.
Mid-season, over the past 3 or 4 years. Ryan Johansson, Kyle Turris,
PK Subban,
Matt Duchene.
The list is very long.
Granlund, Hartman, Boyle, Simmons, what have you. There have been a lot of those moves. I feel like you're almost overloading on those moves if you continue to do it. Just because, even though this team is in a good spot now, I don't think that they are one player away from being a bona fide Stanley Cup contender if they make the playoffs. I think if they make the playoffs, as we know, anything can happen, and this team is certainly talented. I just don't think that they should pay the premium trade deadline prices for one of the big name players that's reportedly available at this time. I think they should continue to work on rebuilding their farm system and recoup draft picks. If they lose these next 3 games and they fall a little bit out of the race and they want to sell off some of the guys we were talking about, so be it. But if they continue to stay within 2-3-1 point of the playoff race, of the wild card race, if anything, I think they should be a soft buyer. I don't think they should break the bank to bring in one of the big name players.
So your mindset towards the trade deadline has changed a little bit.
A little bit.
In the last few games.
Yes.
But not drastically.
No. I just do not believe that this is the year to push the proverbial chips to the center of the table. They've done enough of that. You hope that Ryan Ellis is close, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later on. You hope that Ryan Ellis is close, and I can imagine right now David Poile saying that Ryan Ellis is like a trade deadline acquisition, you can see it now.
Mm-hmm. It's what a lot of teams say about a recovering player from injured reserve
right.
when they return this time of year. They say this is basically our trade deadline acquisition or a trade deadline acquisition.
Correct. So you see that. Or I think they should find a solid middle pair, second, third pair defenseman.
But that's going to cost you probably more than you want.
Right. And the interesting thing is the market was set yesterday when the New Jersey Devils traded their captain, Andy Green, to the New York Islanders for a second-round draft pick, I believe it was, and a mid-level prospect. Andy Green is a 37-year-old player on an expiring contract. He's a defensive-oriented defenseman, somewhat one-dimensional, and had a full no-move or no-trade. I can't remember which one. They're basically the same. That's the market now for a rental player, for a 37-year-old defenseman. So Brendan Dillon's price just went up, and Sammy Vatanen's price just went up. So I'm not sure who's out there in the second tier of defensemen, but I just don't think the Predators should spend a fortune to bolster this team's chances at the trade deadline.
I've been of the belief for most of the second half of the season, once we started talking trade deadline after the Winter Classic, that not only should they be looking at trading Mikael Granlund, maybe even Craig Smith, but see what you could get for Nick Bonino on the trade market, which at the trade deadline, if the Preds gave up a first-round pick for Paul Gostad once upon a time, they could get something of really good value for Nick Bonino, the fact that he has an additional year on his contract. I think these last three games for me have at least, if I'm GM David Poile, made me think about not doing anything and just standing pat and acting like Granlund and Smith particularly are your own rentals.
Yes.
Like Columbus did last year with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky.
Yeah. I think for me, I would either stand pat, as we like to say around this time of the year, or look to add a depth defenseman. I don't think they should do anything crazy. I just don't think cap-wise it needs to be significant. And the Predators have done a good job of getting some future assets. They did a good job of that last year, trading PK Subban. Their second-round pick, the Devils' second-round pick, which the Predators own, is going to be basically another late-round, first-round pick because the Devils are so bad that it's going to be in the early 30s of the draft. So the Predators might pick, let's just say, in the early 20s and then again in the early 30s. So that's good value. Like, they should not trade that pick unless they're going for it. And I think they've gone for it enough. I think this group has enough go-for-it type players on it already that need to figure it out on their own versus bringing somebody in to help them figure it
out. They could realistically, because they have their own second-round pick, right?
They have their own second-round pick and two third-round picks.
So they could have three top 50 picks.
Yeah.
Realistically.
And what's supposed to be a good draft. I'm not as up on that as others, but I hear it's a solid draft for people that know.
I will take your word for it. Let me just put it that way.
Yes.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. We have someone texting in.
Ooh.
Text us at 615-737-1025 saying, I am impressed with the way the seventh man showed up last night. I was there and the atmosphere was playoff-esque. Is there a chance the seventh man could turn a corner this year and power the team to the playoffs? I've got to say, last night felt as much like a playoff game as it has all season long.
And I would lump in the game against the Islanders as well. I know it didn't have as much significance or as much animosity as the game last night, but these past two games have reminded me of vintage Bridgestone Arena. More so than at any point this season.
You wrote last month that the aura was gone.
I did. After they lost to the Ducks. And at the end, and I had very few people disagreeing with me at that point. So I was impressed with how the crowd responded these past two games. And that is what made Bridgestone Arena such a fantastic place to watch hockey. Especially meaningful hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So to see the crowd respond the way they did, they were active throughout the game. I love when the animosity in the stands is as palpable as it is on the ice. Predators fans and Blues fans don't like each other.
There were a lot of Blues fans there last night.
Just as much as the Predators and the actual Predators and actual Blues don't like each other. Some good dueling chants in there. It was great. Like, that's a great atmosphere. I mean, there have been too many times this season where that building has felt like a mausoleum.
Well, I think the fan base has just wanted that belief.
Yes.
And I said this with Willie Donick last week, that there have been a lot more games, a lot more losses that make you feel bad about this team than there have been wins that make you feel good about this team. And that dates back to probably the start of the calendar year of 2019. I mean, this goes back into last regular season. And just feel like this fan base and that energy within the building has been waiting for what we have seen in these last two home games, which is them and come out and kick somebody's butt, which has not happened in a long time in that building. And usually their butts are getting kicked. And for you to sweep the home and home with St. Louis, win three games in a row for the first time since October, and you are fighting and clawing for your spot within the playoff race, I think those are two big reasons why it felt like it did last night. The third period felt like a playoff game. I took my future father-in-law, who had never been to a Preds game, took him to the game last night, and he was floored by how just energetic and the fact that there was a TV timeout standing ovation. And I'm like, yeah, this is the first time this has happened in a long time. I can't remember the last time that happened inside Bridgestone Arena. That's not a knock on the fans. I just feel like the fans have been waiting for a team to believe in. And I think we could point to last night's game. There's potential for us to be sitting here in early April and we point back to last night's game as perhaps the start of that belief, or maybe the Islanders game. But this stretch right here as the start of the belief that this team could actually do something.
Yeah, I think when you look at the way this team has played at home, when they played the Islanders on Thursday, it was the first time that they had scored at least three goals at home since the last home game before the Christmas break, December 23rd, against the Coyotes. Now, they've been mostly on the road in between then, but that's a long time to go without scoring more than two goals at home.
Sure.
The fans have had very little before these past few home games to be excited about. So I think it's a symbiotic relationship. You know, the Predators are helped by the fans, and the fans are helped by the team playing well. So I think we've seen a return to form in the past couple of games, but, you know, tomorrow is another big test. The Hurricanes give the Predators fits all the time, and the Hurricanes are a very good team. So
Preds did shut them out on Black Friday earlier this season.
That was another game, similarly to the game last night, I feel like, where Pecorine stood on his head. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's definitely stole that game, if I recall correctly.
Coming up next, can we expect a return of Ryan Ellis in tomorrow night's game against Carolina? And we'll also look at the playoff picture as well. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth and Adam Vingan here with you on this Monday evening. Preds host the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow night, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, Ryan Ellis has not been in the lineup for the Nashville Predators since the Winter Classic, since Corey Perry knocked him out in the first period with the cheap elbow there at the Cotton Bowl in Big D, and Ryan Ellis has been out with a concussion ever since. But Ryan Ellis has been getting closer and closer to a return. The last known time for us that he was on the ice was at practice Friday. Do you feel like we could see Ryan Ellis tomorrow night as they host the Carolina Hurricanes?
I'm not sure about tomorrow, just because, as you mentioned, we know he practiced on Friday, but not sure how much he skated on his own Saturday or Sunday or maybe even today, though the team had the day off. That doesn't stop him from going in and skating if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems to be progressing, which is good. He's been skating with the team regularly now since the beginning of the Western Canadian road trip. I believe the morning skate in Winnipeg was his first team activity since being injured. But Now, they clearly miss him, and it sort of goes back to what we were talking about in the previous segment about the defensive help. You know, with respect to Dan Hamhuis and Matt Irwin and Yannick Weber and Jared Tenorti, you know, they definitely need Ryan Ellis in the lineup. And I commend, first of all, Roman Josi for continuing to have a great season despite not having Ryan Ellis by his side for the past 2 months almost.
And it's been a combination of Dante Fabro and Yannick Weber.
Yes.
Next to him.
So that's one. Two, Ryan Ellis, by one metric called goals above replacement, which is sort of this all-encompassing stat that factors in a player's contributions at even strength in special teams on both ends of the ice. At the time of his injury, Ryan Ellis was the most valuable player in the league based on that statistic.
Wow.
In terms of goals above replacement. So he was having, I think, a better year to start this year than he did last year at all when he had a career year across the board. So,
and I didn't think the eye test for Ryan Ellis last season was all that great.
It was not. It certainly wasn't. But this year, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers backed it up. So whenever he comes back, I think the team will be a lot better. You hope that it's by the end of the month if he continues to progress. I'm not sure about tomorrow, but I wonder if it could happen before the end of the month.
Friday, they play in Chicago. Saturday home Columbus, yep. And that starts a 5-game homestand.
Ooh. Love a good homestand.
Yes, absolutely. Well, speaking of home or away, that's an awful segue into saying that we are going on the road in March, on Saturday, March 14th,
mm-hmm.
102.5 The Game. We're taking the bus trip to Columbus this year. Tickets are on sale now.
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 TheGameNashville.com. So if you want to go to Columbus, join me, Chase McCabe, some others from the station, my brother, who is going to be accompanying me on the trip. We are looking forward to going to our old stomping grounds of Ohio to take in the Preds Blue Jackets on Saturday, March 14th.
And I'll be there.
You'll be there.
Not on the bus.
Not on the bus, but you'll be in the press box.
I will be there.
Enjoying the game and being scared by the cannon.
Yes. And then afterwards, we can go somewhere.
There you go. There you go. Adam Vingan with great analysis of what will happen after the game on March 14th. We'll go somewhere.
We'll go somewhere.
Okay. Cool.
I don't know. We'll find somewhere.
The Western Conference playoff race. Before we get out of here, I do want to discuss the current wild card race that we are witnessing with this Nashville Predators team. They have 65 points through 58 games. And earlier today, some President's Trophy action across the National Hockey League. Calgary
President's
won.
President's Day action.
What did I say?
President's Trophy action.
Oh, wow. Some President's Day action.
That's what I'm here for.
Yes. Thank you, Adam. Calgary beat Anaheim 6-4. Arizona beat the New York Islanders 2-1.
The Ducks, by the way, were leading that game 3-1 early in the third.
Oof. The Ducks did a favor to the rest of the West last night by blowing out Vancouver in Vancouver, but did not by letting that lead slip away in Calgary. And Vegas is leading Washington 3-0 as well on NBC Sports Network. But the Preds, last night's win got them within 1 point of both Calgary and Arizona. The fact that Calgary and Arizona both won today means the Preds are back to being 3 points back of those two teams, but they have 3 games in hand of Calgary, 4 games in hand.
I'm not sure how that's possible.
Of Arizona. Well, the Preds have a lot of back-to-backs.
That is true.
To finish the season. Adam, what do you make of that wild card picture?
It changes every day. The Pacific Division especially, it's so tight that, you know, every day there's a change at the top, whether it's Edmonton or Vancouver or Vegas. Calgary and Arizona flip-flop. So the Pacific Division, I think, is going to ultimately determine this playoff race just because it appears that, you know, I don't know how many times the Central Division has gotten 5 teams in the playoffs versus 3 from the Pacific.
Oh, it's happened more than you think.
It's happened a lot, I feel like. You know, perhaps this is the year that the Pacific gets 5, but of course that would mean the Predators didn't make it. But,
well, the Preds are 7 points behind Colorado. I don't think they'll catch them.
I don't want to say
those three are safe.
Yeah, I don't want to say that the Predators can't get back into third in the Central, but I say it's very unlikely.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So, you know, maybe we see the Predators make it and get some Pacific Division crossover action.
Think of this, though. Only 6 points separate the top team in the West and the eighth best team in the West. That is a jumbled mess in the Western Conference. It should make for an exciting final 6-7 weeks of action in the league.
Buckle up. Hold on to your butt, Porth.
I will do that.
Hold on to it.
Okay. Adam Vingan of The Athletic.
You're not holding on to
it. A very awkward final segment here on Preds Insiders, ESPN
102.5 The Game. Jurassic Park, man. That's right. You don't see movies.
I've seen Jurassic Park.
Okay. Well, that's the one movie I know you've seen.
I've seen many.
Many might be pushing it.
I saw a first one last night.
What?
Failure to Launch. Never seen that one.
That's a bad movie.
No, it's not.
Is that the one with Matthew McConaughey and Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yes.
Did your fiance make you watch that?
Yes.
Mm. If you're looking for a Matthew McConaughey romantic comedy, the best one is How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I've seen that one, too.
That's a good one.
She also forced me to watch that one.
All right. Well, go hold on to your butt somewhere else.
I will, and I'll watch The Bachelor while doing it tonight. For Adam Vingan of The Athletic, I'm Ryan Porth. Thanks for listening to Preds Insiders this evening. Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann and Company right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.